Welcome to Audacity, where every week we're delving into different topics surrounding the world of art and, in particular, contemporary African art. Now, every 2 years, the epicenter of the art world shifts to Venice. And in 2024, Adriano Pedrosa from Brazil was the artistic director of the 60th La Biennale, with his much spoken about theme, Foreigners Everywhere. In 2026, at the helm of what is often described as the Olympics of the art world, the focus will shift to Africa as the first female African, Koyo Kwo, chief curator of the Zeitz Museum of Contemporary Art Africa, will serve as the 61st artistic director of La Biennale. George Pemba was one of the major Black South African historical painters who were posthumous debutants at this past Biennale. His work impacted so many South Africans, in particular, his great-granddaughter, Annelisa Mangu, who is making her own indelible footprints in the contemporary African art ecosystem. I caught up with her at the Joburg Art Fair.
It began to be something of substance for me when I was witnessing my great-grandfather react to the fact that he can no longer paint, and really being able to see the pain in his eyes and seeing what it had done to him and witnessing what passion looked like. And then I think fast forward a few years, you become like an art monitress. You do things in the arts, you do things in theater, you love clothing, so you participate in fashion a bit. But I always had the bug of being in the arts. At the time, I wanted to be an artist. I think I lacked the... Actually, no, now that I'm an adult, I see what artists were going through. You feel very within your own body and very consumed by your pain, your joy, your aspirations. And I felt that that requires a certain level of management that I did not have. While I had my first exhibition, I think around the age of 17, I was wanting to drop shadow the curator and the gallerist who had allowed me to be in a space for a very affordable price. And I seemed to be curating more within that journey than kind of focusing on the production of my work. And he said to me, listen, I think you're really good at this. And then I asked him what curating is, because, and then he said, no, you've seen curators before. They're all over. They're the people that seem to be walking around mindlessly in museums. And I thought, oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. So I think as soon as I began to investigate what that meant, what it entails, I was really drawn by the element of caretaking, taking care of objects, taking care of people, making people feel okay around something that sometimes seems foreign. Because so many of us, particularly people of color, didn't necessarily grow up going to museums and perhaps even having parents really kind of unpacking things or even asking for your opinion. It was always surrounded around school kind of trips. And so I wanted to do that. I wanted to kind of lift the lid of invisibility on something that I think people of color are naturally talented at and are drawn to, but maybe don't have the vocab or the knowledge as to how to make something out of this. And then, you know, went to school for it too, a few times. And yeah, this is where I am. It's been an incredible journey. I've been so blessed to work for galleries, work for museums, shadow, commercial spaces. And 4 years ago, we registered under the Aegis.
Which is so exciting for me, because to see you in your own space, your website is incredible.
Thank you. Have a look.
Of course, I have stalked and shall I do. But that's what I absolutely love about how you've taken on all of this, is that you're doing everything with such integrity, with such grace and such elegance,
and it
looks world class.
It's been a bit. It's been a step by step process. I think what happens when you work in these spaces and you see what the gallerists are doing, whether you work for them or you're just an observer or an art lover or an audience member, you do not understand the work that goes behind it. And so a lot of the time, it looks like it's just instant gratification. You register, part of a fair, but I think it's going to the talks, going to the fairs, asking questions, being part of committees, slowly learning, shadowing restorers, shadowing gallerists, curators, academics, and then really realizing where you fit in this, I think, ecosystem. And then, you know, you make a plan and you make something magical and you decide if this is what you want to do. And then you do it with as much integrity as you can, because as much as the artists are not physically here with me, I have a piece of them on the walls and I have to represent them well. And that's a huge task. And it's you just have to have a lot of integrity in this business. I mean, look at you.
I try.
She needs to tell us more about what she's doing. But I'm sure she will be doing it very soon.
That's exactly. I think we're on a similar journey because I want to make art more accessible. Yeah. And I remember this artist. Yeah. Just tell us a bit more about the artist. Yeah, because to me, it's a piece that I live with, one of these pieces, and I need to live with this.
So Srengezi Gum is an extraordinary artist. A lot of his references and inspiration comes from the social realists of our time, your Pembas, your Segotos, and he really finds a lot of inspiration because they are mirroring and representing, or they were mirroring and representing a time in many of our lives that we recognize, whether it's, you know, in the past or it's in the contemporary. But he really wanted to create works that talk about the township, but not in the way that many people understand it to be, which is very much associated around poverty, pain, let's just say general lacking. And so now he creates these beautiful pieces that I think people of all races and all backgrounds can relate to. Dance is a very universal thing. Love is a very universal thing.
And the way he depicts movement, to me.
Movement.
There's joy in this movement.
And color and happiness. And I think that's what we need. I don't know if people are feeling it, but there comes a time in the year where people a little bit burnt out and exhausted and feeling discouraged. But I think these works give you hope.
They do.
And that's what you want. You know, I think this in many ways, and I mean, I know you're a mother of more, but this is definitely a work, I think, that you can look at and see aspects of your life in. But also maybe in higher heels.
In higher heels. I mean, I do.
And more glamorous clothing. Maybe
this is me.
Maybe a few more kids at it. Maybe a camera around.
Maybe a camera. Maybe the camera isn't there. We're just not seeing it.
Maybe that's the shadow. Someone
could
else
could be reinterpreting all of this. That's the shadow of the working mom, the caring mom, all of this. But yes.
Yes.
The other artist, because I remember this artist as well from Cape Town Art Fair. Tell me a bit about
that artist. Is Mukhaka Wuli Tamani Nobagada, 24 years old, the youngest artist in the show, and I think often is the youngest artist in the show.
Yes.
Her works really speak about Black femininity, people of color femininity, just leisure, something that women are often not allowed to do, I think, and that's a universal kind of conversation where we're expected to be breadwinners, mothers, we're expected to be strong, yet we're expected to be feminine, we're expected to work hard, yet we're expected to, you know, have our nails done.
And we know that.
And our feet moisturized, you know. And
yes.
So what she really tries to depict in her works is Black leisure, is femininity. I think lace was often, back in the day, a material that was seen as very elegant. Mm-hmm. And so she kind of incorporates it as a base in her pieces. And then, you know, adds on with the acrylic paints to make it this extraordinary body of work. For the previous fair, which we showed in, she had made references to some classical pieces. So I think she's going through a very experimental phase, which I'm liking. I think that's what art is about. Yes. You know, we can have moments where we say, I don't think this will work for this particular presentation or this will work, but I do not try to dictate what my artists create. My job is then to put a beautiful body of work together so that it's visually cohesive. And, you know, every time you hope to get it right. And there was something missing today. So I was like, I think it's a vase and flowers. And then once I got a vase and flowers, I was like, okay, cool.
Fine. It's all come together.
So, you know, there's a lot of aspects of it that really make a booth a successful booth. And then you have other booths around that have works that are more focused on materiality, which I love. And so what I like about a fair is that it's not only an opportunity for me to showcase my curatorial thinking and direction, but I get to learn from my fellow neighbors. You know, it's a competitive industry, and sure it is, but there's a lot of love in it and a lot of joy and a lot of sharing. And you meet people from all over the world and you get to have really beautiful conversations.
As the curatorial director at Pace Gallery, which boasts a presence from New York to Tokyo, London, Geneva, Seoul, everywhere, Kimberly Drew has taken her audience all over the world with her, using her social media presence to share her experiences. I was lucky enough to spend some time with her at my first ever Venice Biennale, and then we caught up again in Josie.
The last time I saw you was at Venice Biennale. How amazing to actually come and enjoy the art here. And I'm so glad that you're actually bringing all your followers with you. Everybody knows you as Museum Mammy on Instagram. But Kimberly, tell me, what has your art journey been like, in particular with reference to contemporary African art?
Oh, wow. What a question to begin with. I think for me, mostly coming from an American perspective, it's been really valuable to be a guest. I got into this debate last night with someone and I was saying I'm a guest and they're like, you're not a guest. And I was like, no, I am a guest. Because I feel like there's so much to be garnished, especially with the passport that I have, an opportunity to be on the ground and to meet with artists and understand and come in with humility. There's, of course, an incredible market boom that's happening now. But for me, it's so much more important to have these authentic connections. Being able to spend time with people, being able to sit down in this way and reconnect and reconvene and find each other bouncing around, because I think it humanizes it.
This is something that I enjoy, the fact that when we're looking at contemporary African art, you can actually have interactions with the artist. And it's amazing how much that reflects the state of the nation at that point in time. What's your time in South Africa been like?
So this is my fourth time in South Africa. Well, I've been back multiple times over the years, let me say that. And I've been able to come to South Africa expressly for different cultural kind of moments. And I feel at home here in, like, hopefully the least cheesy way.
No. I feel that you are.
You know, like, I feel very grounded and very settled here. And I feel like it's really amazing, especially, like, the folks of our moment coming together and, like, having read the same books and to see these different kind of ways that we are looking at each other across the gate and then being able to be there and be, like, sitting at, you know, at a dinner table and talking through the different things that we're teasing through and respecting the difference and finding these, like, really authentic connections. It's the dream, I think, of the generations ahead of us. And it feels really beautiful to be emboldened in these opportunities.
I want to find out from you. I mean, as I said, I've been following you on social media and I really do feel that you're making art more accessible. But how can we do more of that? Because a lot of people generally of color feel that the art world is something for the highbrowed and not for them. We sort of feel othered.
Yeah.
How do we make art more accessible to people who look like us?
Yeah. I mean, it is exclusive by design. And I think it starts there with just, like, that acknowledgement. But I think for me at this point in my career, I think understanding that it is precious is the first step. It's like a lot of what that instinct is understanding that it's of importance to you. And so how important is it to you? Is it important enough that you show up? Is it important enough that you find your way there? Because I think a lot of times, like, yes, there's infrastructural barriers. And I think being in Venice, we saw that very intimately. Like, whether that was, like, the visa dance or these other things. But at the same time, I think it really is, it's a both and. And I try not to say that with too much privilege because I understand my position as well. But I feel like a lot of times I'm talking to folks who are like, they don't want me there. And I'm like, well, just go. Like, go. Like, we are of people who have been told no for so long. For so long.
Just gonna take up space.
We owe it to ourselves to take up space or to build new space. And I think that that's what we're seeing in this cultural moment as well. Like, I was just coming from Indianapolis, Indiana, where there's an equitable art fair that started that's all Black artists and all the artists get like 100% of the commission. People are building the spaces. People are building the residencies. And I think that we have to be as audacious as possible or the next generation is going to be having these same conversations. And I would hate that.
I love that you use the word audacious because my podcast is called Audacity because I'm trying to be audacious as I go on this journey. So thank you so much for being a guest. I appreciate that.
Associate Curator of the South African Pavilion at the Venice Biennale, Siwa Mgoboza has been a prominent voice in the contemporary African art scene for many years. Serving as the director of the Still Artist Residency, which was founded by Ayana V. Jackson, he's been instrumental in developing artists in Africa and from the diaspora. I caught up with him at the Joburg Art Fair to discuss the latest project he'd been working on and, of course, to chat about his experiences at the Venice Biennale.
In this particular case, we are presenting a Nigerian-American artist by the name of Moya Oyelola. His exhibition, installation and performance in the fair's new photography section is called the Department of People Plus Process. It's a performative work that's sort of a critique on the bureaucratic systems we have to endure. And the beautiful thing about this exhibition, it's a universal thing that everyone has to endure. Whether you're getting a visa, you're going to get your ID, you go into the DMV to get your license. And people are welcomed into the show by agents. These are people who you'd find in these typical institutions that sort of govern the space.
The space.
So someone will walk in and they'll offer you a clipboard with an application form. You sit down in an uncomfortable chair.
I was about to say, we know these chairs.
So you know these chairs. And then you sit here. It might take 5 minutes. It might take longer than that. And the infamous quote in South Africa, the system is offline. Where things go out. And I think as a Nigerian and an American, it's a critique on truly what's happening historically, contextually, socially, politically, and economically on the continent and on that side of the world. And I think what we do at Still Arts Residency is find artists who speak about these important topics around the world, and we try to present them in a way where it doesn't feel daunting. So people are having, we've been hearing remarks around, because we were fortunate enough to have this performance before at the Residency in partnership with Soul House. So people have been able to experience it along the side. But then people at the fair have been coming in, and usually at the fair, you're sort of just walking around at your own pace and you're looking at things, and truly people are trying to sell. It's a commercial endeavor. But we're fortunate enough to put together this, as a non-for-profit residency, we're able to put together this presentation that is truly public participatory. Mm. So people are walking in, they're being asked to sit for however long, and people are engaging. And I think the greatest feedback that we received is that people weren't expecting to be at a fair and then have to engage with an artist like this. So I think it's paying off in a really beautiful way.
But I think that's what you always do, is you always take us a step further. And I love how you've used your work to really put incredible young artists on the map. So thank you so much for that.
It's only a pleasure. I think South Africa has incredible artists who have been contributing to the ecosystem worldwide. And it's always beautiful when we're able to see each other at this level and see everyone's presentations, because it's truly a testament of what's happening currently in South Africa.
Venice, to be part of the South African Pavilion, what was that whole experience like? And how do you think the world received the South African Pavilion?
Well, first and foremost, a huge honor to represent my country at the world, one of the world's largest art shows, curated by Portia Malaija and myself as associate curator. We presented a multimedia installation, sonic installation, sensory, multi-sensory, with artist Made You Look. And it's been so beautiful. I was literally just speaking to someone who was there, and they were saying there was this weird thing about being in a foreign country and being able to feel at home.
Yes.
Because they were able to experience it through the sound, and knowing the geographical specificity of the project and how this particular project is not just things that are happening in South Africa, because around Adriano Pedrosa's curatorial framework, Foreigners Everywhere, the project is resonating with people across about borders and boundaries.
I think what was so inspiring for me is I actually took time out and I went to listen to Portia Malachi's guest lecture, or her lecture at UCT at Michaelis. And I had a chance then to listen to the full sound piece with no interruptions. And it's almost spiritual.
Very much so. And I think if you think of how people have lived specifically in South Africa with the ecosystem at a whole, rain, water, land, I think it's really a tribute to that. And this is exactly what we're touching on our talk. We'll be touching on how the sound was made, how the archival sources were found of it, how the artists recorded the thunderstorms in Johannesburg, how they recorded songs of calling for water from their hometown, Dinokana, in North South Africa. So it's truly a sound piece that was not just vocally made up, but also a sound that people will know and be able to relate to.
So, of course, what we're all most excited about is 2026 and seeing what Koyo has to offer as the then curator of the Venice Biennale.